G'day everybody and welcome to another Down Under Centre Migrating to Australia podcast. This is a good little podcast if you're a tradie. I'm joined by Ant Taylor, the TRA Assessment Manager from Australia Trade Training College, also one of our engineering assessors. And we're talking about all things to do with trade skills assessment. So welcome, Ant.
Hey, Wes. How's it going?
Good, mate. Good. So that was your best attempt of an Aussie accent because you are not from Australia, mate. Whereabouts are you from originally?
Yeah, so from the UK as well. So I came to Australia about 10 years ago and have been working in about skills assessments pretty much ever since that time. So I've been in the program for a long while as an assessor. And then since then, I have become a head of department for the whole skills assessment program within ATTC.
Yeah, and you're doing a great job, mate. It's we're getting those skills assessments in and out, and that's what the migration agents and the migrants want. So, mate, your background, well, firstly, whereabouts in the UK are you from?
Yeah, so I was initially from a place close to Norwich.
Your wife, Karen, is she from the UK or is she an Aussie?
No, we're from the same location, different towns, but sort of close by.
So who got the visa to come over, Ant? Was it yourself? Or who was the main applicant?
It was actually Karen initially. Our process is quite convoluted, but in the same sense, I ended up becoming the main visa applicant based on the skills assessment.
Yeah, perfect. And, okay, so you did a skills assessment. Do you remember which RTO you did the skills assessment through at the time?
Yep, it was VetAssess.
Okay. And then you came to Oz, mate. And whereabouts are you located?
I live on the sunny coast. I live in a place called Palmwoods, which is close to the hinterland part of the sunny coast.
And you love living on the sunny coast, don't you, mate?
Love it. Absolutely love it.
Just for the listeners, Lisa sets up. Lisa's in South Australia. I'm in Vic and Ant's in the sunny coast. And he's always bragging about the weather and all that there. But how hot you got today, mate, on a mid October day.
So we're mid spring and we're looking at 27 today.
Nice. What's the weekend got installed for you?
Yeah, we're probably going to hit 30 at the weekend. Sunday, I think, is going to be the warmest day out of the two. But it's just looking like full sun and 30 degrees.
And did you first settle in the sunny coast or did you move were different areas?
Yeah, no, we came straight here. We actually, as a bit of a background, very early days before we even applied for a visa or a skills assessment or anything like that, we actually did a bit of a tour around the East Coast. So we sort of started off south of Sydney and then we basically drove up to Queensland and sort of central Queensland. I think it's probably where we sort of finished up on a bit of a tour. And we just sort of said, you know, anywhere sort of Brisbane north was going to be our location for us to sort of potentially live. And, yeah, we sort of got back from that holiday and decided, what the hell, let's just see what happens and make it happen. And the rest is history, I suppose.
So good. And good on you, mate, because you're definitely doing a good job with the TRA program and everything like that. So, mate, let's get straight into the skills assessments. You play a big role within the skills assessments. Now, we also mentioned that you're an assessor. So were you doing any assessment work while you're in the UK?
No. I wasn't. I actually ran an engineering business for 10 years before I actually emigrated. But I was doing lots of training with our apprentices that we had. And actually devised my own training program for those guys as well. So, but yeah, as an assessor or a trainer, no, I wasn't physically doing that role at that point.
It's a good job out of you being a trainer and assessor. I mean, I look after the plumbers, you're doing the engineers. And, for migrants out there that are interested in getting into this game, do hit us up if you can, if you do a skills assessment with Australia Trade Training College and you get your certificate three, you've got to then go off and get your training and assessing qualification, which some of it can be done via recognition of prior learning. But we're always on the lookout, aren't we, mate, for more trainer and assessors, especially in the trades area. It's hard to come across, Ant, because there's just so much work here at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah, look, is pretty insane with regards to numbers. Obviously, the country as a whole, for pretty much most of the trades, whether you're a chef or a cook or you're working as an engineer in the mines or even just in general fabrications or construction trades, that they're all highly sought after trades in most states of Australia, and we are desperate for them. You know, the numbers are huge that we need, and we need to fill those spaces.
It's amazing, mate. I reckon every day just hitting up by employers every day, just screaming for them. And I guess we probably cop a little bit of flack with the delays within skills assessments, but let's run through the process. Not so much of it. We'll get to the point of a skills assessment and give you guys some tips in a little bit, but we'll run through the process of it. So to migrate to Australia, you need to have an occupation on the skilled list. So each occupation has an assessing body, and that assessing body varies on your occupation. And sometimes if you're a licensed trade, you'd be required to do a practical assessment. If you're a non-licensed trade, so guys, licensed trades are plumbers, refrigeration mechanics, and electricians. You'll all be required to do a practical assessment. And our team with ATTC, we do the plumbing and electrical practical assessments. For the what we call as the OSAP occupations, that's, you know, like your motor mechanic, carpenter, cook, chef, fabricator, welder, the list goes on, and we'll pop a link down with all the assessments that we carry out. Those guys need to do a documentary assessment and a technical interview. And how the process works, listeners, is what they'll do is TRA, which is Trades Recognition Australia, that's part of the government. They work directly with migration. And what they've done for certain occupations, they've outsourced this work to registered training organisations, so to an RTO, and that's where ATTC comes in, and that's a department that works with and manages for that, for the TRA program. So people don't pay ATTC for a skills assessment, Ant. They pay TRA, and can you just run through the cost of what they pay?
There's a couple of stages. If you're a non-licensed trade, as Wes just mentioned, the licensed ones being electrician general and plumber general. If you're a non-licensed trade, which is basically all the other dirty trades from around that, there's two stages to the process. And the documentary evidence stage generally is a stage payment thing where it's just the documentary evidence stage. You pay $1,120 to Trades Recognition Australia. And after that, once you've got past that stage and you've been approved by the assessor, you move on to the technical interview stage, which we call our stage three. And that then is $2,000 as a what we call, there's two categories for payment or for pay amounts. You generally, guys, being from the UK, would not have an Australian qualification, so you would be deemed as a pathway one, which means those costs I just mentioned are exactly what those costs would be. However, if you were deemed a Pathway 2 application, which means you already have hold an Australian qualification in your trade, the costs are the same for the documentary evidence, which is $1,120, but for the technical interview, it's $900.
It's a bit cheaper, obviously, if you do it, but at the end of the day, then you've got to pay for the AQF3, which is going to be a lot more than the $1,100 gap, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's one of those things. So there's certain requirements that you need for a trade skills assessments, and to be eligible for an unlicensed trade, you need to hold a relevant qualification and 3 years of full-time paid work experience, or no qualification and 5 years. Or if you're a licensed trade, it's a relevant qualification and 4 years, or or no qualification and 6 years. And that's the hardest part of the skills assessment process is the documentary assessment. Would you agree with that?
100%, because, look, we understand it's some, certainly from a licensed trades point of view, or maybe even from if you're a carpenter, you may be self-employed. So that those types of pieces of evidence from an employment and pay evidence requirement is actually quite hard and can be very time-consuming. The problem is those pieces of evidence are actually required for the skills assessment. Without it, you likely not progress. But there's other ways of obtaining pieces of evidence. So it's not just you don't have a pay slip, that's fine. There's always options around what other types of pay evidence that can be provided.
Yeah, we'll work with you on that, guys, you know, through the Down Under Centre. We've got to go back another step, though, Ant, because a completion of the skills assessment for the OSAP occupations, everything apart from plumbers, electricians and refrigeration mechanics, the migrant will receive their relevant Australian qualification. So generally it's a Certificate 3.
Yep.
As well as the document they need for the visa, which is the skills assessment. Now, what you'll notice, if you hold certain passports and you want to go on a sponsored visa, you also have to do these skills assessments. So, you know, if you can get in contact with us and we can tell you or your employer if you need a skills assessment. But if you're generally from the UK and Ireland, you won't for a sponsored visa. But there's certain occupations that need to do it. So you've got to be compliant, I guess, and for TRA and match their guidelines. But you've as an RTO, you've also got to be compliant with ASQA. So yep. Do you just want to just explain to people listening, Ant, what ASQA is and the relevance of ASQA?
ASQA is basically the governing body for any RTO or registered training organisation. Basically, that's what ATTC is. So basically, they're our governing body, as I said. What we have to do with regards to evidence, for you to obtain a qualification, an Australian qualification, or an AQF level 3 or 4, depending on what's trade, we have to have specific pieces of evidence. So things like a written description of what you do relating to individual units of competency, plus also photos or videos you actually undertaking tasks of that work as well. So that goes alongside, but that's just for the qualification side. The pay and employment evidence is not necessarily ASQA related. That's more TRA or Trades Recognition Australia related. So that goes towards the guidelines, the overall guidelines of the program and process.
So if a person is an electrician or a plumber, we're not really asking for photos and videos because they'll do a practical assessment. Yep. But for the other trades that ATTC assess, it's a mandatory requirement for them to show photos, videos, or verbal or written proof of them doing certain tasks to tick off the units of competency. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. So all the non-licensed trades, that's really what that relates to. But as you mentioned, Wes, for a licensed trade person, we're not requesting photos or videos or even a write-up of lots of units of competency in that, because we rely, not necessarily rely, but we use the practical assessment, which is only relevant for the licensed trades, as a good gauge for the evidence to back that physical evidence up.
So the job of a TRA-approved assessing body is to collect a relevant documentation and issue a positive outcome. And I guess you have to issue a negative outcome as well if the person hasn't got the correct documentation. And the whole reason for that is TRA, the governing body, that, you know, they don't know who a carpenter is, for example. So they've got to use qualified trainers and assessors that work for a registered training organisation that follows all the guidelines and then gets audited by ASQA on a regular basis. So there's no real shortcuts that can be done with a skills assessment, is there?
Not really. It's very process-driven and it's based on hard evidence to prove, because at the end of the day, you're putting yourself in a position where your skills are being assessed to an Australian standard to some degree. So the assessors here need to be able to map your evidence against the units of competency within that qualification.
Yeah.
So that's what the documents are that are provided as a part of the skills assessment.
Yeah, good work, mate. And it's it's challenging. I know clients get a bit frustrated because they are that occupation and sometimes they can't. I'll give you a scenario. Let's say I was working in an area where I wasn't able to provide photos and videos. How would I get around doing that?
Generally what we have is we have what's called an applicant kit, which actually basically means that you do a quite in-depth write-up against each individual unit of competency. But what we also need is a part of, instead of actually having that hard physical evidence of you actually observing you doing these tasks, we need things like probably a letter from your employer to say that no mobile phones are allowed in the workplace, stuff like that, because how can you obtain those videos or photos if you're not allowed that device in there to be able to do that? So as long as that's provided as a part of the assessment, you know, it's taken into consideration.
So Putting your assessing hat on, Ant, you've got one of the, give us an example of an occupation that you would assess personally.
fitter and turner, machinist.
So
So
we've got a fitter that come in. They weren't able to get photos and videos. So their documentary assessment stage, you've been able to tick their boxes. So does that mean that their technical interview, you as an assessor would have to ask many more questions to make sure they're compliant and they tick all the boxes for ASQA?
Yeah, very likely, yeah. Every assessor, even whether it's just myself, any other assessor that's doing the other types of trades, they would be looking at if the documentary evidence is a bit light from what they like, they can probably target some additional questions in when it gets to the technical interview itself.
Okay. So TRA have hired a couple of different RTOs, and we know that BetAssess aren't operating in a couple of areas at the moment, and we hope they get back and doing that. And it's all to do with, with timelines. But, you know, the middle of October 2023, what are the timelines, for example, for a chef from once they've submitted their documents to ATTC to getting a positive assessment? How long would that take roughly, mate?
Well, generally, the guideline that we're provided by Trades Recognition Australia is 15 weeks from the initial payment stage, meaning stage two, the documentary evidence stage, into ATTC, and it's 15 weeks that it has to be approved by or completed by.
But at the moment, what, you guys are probably 9-8 weeks at the moment for chefs, for example?
Yeah, look, we can obviously process clients, and we do process clients faster than that. Certain trades for sure. It just depends on the volumes, obviously.
It's difficult. I mean, I know for a fact that we work with lots of different migration agents at the Down Under Centre and assist processing skills assessments for them, as well as all of our clients too. It's like hundreds and hundreds a month of people that need to be assessed. Do you find that there's certain one occupation that Australia really focusing on for trades or ATTC as a business is getting really busy with?
Chefs and cooks are the biggest trade for any RTO that does this program by quite a way. And, yeah, believe it or not, we actually don't have too many issues. We have more assessors that actually can assess that trade. So that doesn't hold up the process so much. But some of the other trades, if I just run through some of the main trades that we assess, obviously chefs and cooks, fitters, welders and fabricators, and probably electricians and plumbers would be the next most largest motor mechanics, as well.
Yeah, lots of motor mechanics. They come in all the time. So, yeah, no, it's a good system you got. And, I think it's all to do with procedures, and that's why it's great to be working with you guys. You've got great procedures. They operate really well, and I like it's very approachable. Even though you're sort of working on behalf of immigration to deliver the required skills assessments, it's also very approachable, which helps because it's so difficult for sometimes non-English speaking people to understand the information that's provided. Because when they do the technical interview, it's correct saying the migrant is the only one able to be in the room where the technical interview is held.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, so basically, there's a process here and a guideline we have to follow from Trades Recognition Australia, the applicant has to be speaking in English in their interview. There's no translators allowed. They are also invigilated as a part of that assessment too, and it's also recorded. So there's actually three people in the actual interview itself. The invigilator is. They're not a tradesperson. They're just somebody who is there just to verify that you're not potentially cheating or reading information from any resource. The assessor is there, obviously, just asking you questions. And the reality is that the assessor is just asking questions about what you do.
Yeah, perfect. Sorry to butt in over you then, Anne. I apologize for that, mate. I was just going to mention you've also got actual assessment buildings. I know we've got quite a few of them for you. But you've got like Australia covered, India, Nepal, Bangladesh, Philippines, New Zealand, United Kingdom, South Africa. So their venues at TRA is I guess my question is, you've got the venues, but people can get an exemption. So if someone lived in a certain area and they couldn't travel, is there a certain distance that TRA would say we can apply for an exemption for?
The standard what we have here is let's just say you are the Leatherhead office in the UK is the assessment centre or assessment location. You live in, I don't know, let's just say Manchester. Now, that's, as we all know, that's probably going to take you at least 3 hours to probably get there, maybe a bit longer, depending on which mode of transport. You would likely be exempt from travelling because of basically it's going to take you a day just to do your skills assessment for a technical interview. So it's the realistic timeframes have been put in place and exemptions are allowed based on as long as you are outside of that three-hour travel, you would be exempt from traveling. However, if you are inside that 3 hours, you will be requested to travel to that assessment centre.
Yeah, good work, mate. Well, very well explained. And our friendly staff guys will greet you there and we'll give you a list of instructions, bring a bit of personal ID. And when I'm assisting with the assessments for plumbers and you're assisting with the assessment process for your occupations, we're not there to to make people feel awkward. We're there to ask the necessary questions. And if the documentary assessment, the first part, is prepared correctly, it actually equals a quite an easy assessment. Would you agree?
Yeah, and the beauty of using the Down Under Centre for collecting that evidence on your behalf speeds up the process when it gets into ATTC itself. So at least if we know all the boxes are ticked before it comes in, what it means is when it hits the emails and inquiry system at ATTC, it actually means when the team reviews that evidence, it can process much faster than if we have to keep going backwards and forwards to yourself or the Down Under Centre to request more information. Obviously, that then holds up a process.
Yeah, and if you're looking for a sponsored visa, guys, and your employer's invested some money in you and you are one of the passport holders that requires a positive skills assessment to obtain the sponsored visa, the employers want you to get it as quick as you can because they've invested money. You know, if it's going to take you 6 months, 8 months to get the documents and to be assessed, by that stage, the job may not be there. So we find that we process lots of applicants that are looking for sponsored visas. But also, look, guys, you know, the process to apply for a skilled visa is have an occupation on the skilled list. Each occupation has an assessing body. Once you've completed your skills assessment, you're then eligible to put in an expression of interest. But remember, the whole reason of putting in an expression of interest is to gain an invitation to apply. So if you don't have the necessary points, we don't want you paying for a skills assessment because it's not going to lead to anything. Now, in certain cases, you might have an employer who would offer a 186 ENS visa, but it's really important that we sort of get the right information from you at the start and make sure you're going to have enough points for the visa if you are going down the skilled process. And we've got really good steps for that. So we'll actually, for our clients, give them a consultation, free consultation, chat with them, work out their points, ask the necessary questions, you know, that identify if they're eligible to pass a skills assessment depending on their occupation. And then we use our client portal, which has taken us probably 10 years, Ant, to get to a point where it's quite efficient, where we know exactly what the assessors need for each occupation. Photos, videos, pay evidence, tax documents. We also know what visas, what your migration agent or one of our team know as well. So we'll give you examples and we'll work with you for that. And you keep uploading all the documents that you've got. And our advice is before you actually pay for the skills assessment, just make sure you're going to get a visa. Make sure you've got enough points, you've got state options or visa options. Again, even though we process skills assessments for immigration, we don't want people having a skills assessment that they can't use. They can't use for a visa, and so
exactly.
A few tips that you'd if you could offer someone a tip, even preparing for a technical interview with yourself or another colleague who assesses, what would a few tips be, mate?
I would just whatever you put down is some of the notes that you put down in the applicant kit part or the work history section in the DUC portal. Maybe just brush up on some of that skill because the assessor does need to talk about individual units of competency. But generally what the assessor does is actually probably goes off your CV more. They would say, okay, you did this type of task in your job. And so they would look at, okay, I work on that type of machinery or I do this type of machining or I fabricate this or I work in this restaurant and I cook these types of menus, things on the menu. And the assessor will probably talk about them. He'll say, because what he wants to do is get a feel for what you do, what you know. And it ends up just being a conversation between two tradespeople. It's just getting as much information out of yourself. And the main thing is just being calm about it. When you talk about it, don't get stressed about it, because what the assessor wants is you to calm down and be quite relaxed in the interview, because the assessor gets more information out of you guys. And that helps the assessor from the assessor's point of view and also from your overall outcome.
Yeah. Well said, Ant. There's nothing worse than assessing someone who seems a little bit anxious and stressed, because it is hard to draw the information from them. Guys, it's really simple. If you're saying you're doing a certain task, you know, and it's on your CV or you've produced it in your documentary assessment, what tools did you use? How did you go about it? Give us an example of the time that you did that. And the assessor knows it. Like, it's the same. They've worked on the same similar machinery. They'll understand it. Like, you know, and if I assessed an engineer, I wouldn't have a clue what they were talking about. You know, but that's why the assessor holds that relevant qualification, and you know, is a qualified trainer and assessor to deliver it. So many people contact us and they're really anxious about what's going to happen in the technical interview. I'm sort of, I guess, very much, mate, please don't stress about the technical interview. If you are who you say you are and you've got the qualifications, you've got the industry experience, you're going to be absolutely fine, because the assessors will work with you to. They'll change questions. If the question isn't understood by the migrant, part of the assessor's responsibility is to re-ask that question so you understand, so they can draw the information. Because as Ant mentioned before, it's all recorded. You know, this is information. If, you know, like, we've got to prove that you hold the necessary skills. So there's quite a lot in a skills assessment, and that's probably why it costs a little bit. And again, all the money gets paid to TRA. And then you know, the agreement between ATC and TRA gets sorted out. TRA upped the fees a while ago, which is fine, and I guess all in immigration they do it. But there's so much more involved in the assessments now than what they were 10 years ago. Have you noticed that?
Back then, there was really no qualification as such. It was just a skills assessment outcome. It was just verifying that you were working in that trade, and employment evidence was reviewed, where now, because you can achieve more points for your visa application, having the Cert 3 was brought in, having the skills assessment that includes the qualification then actually provides you with more points for your visa application.
And not just that, and it's also for your employer, because, guys, in Australia, you need a qualification for everything. I think you need a qualification these days to cross the road, Ant. You know, everything's just, you know, health and safety. Australia's, you know, when I work in the UK, it was a little bit different. I loved my time in the UK and really enjoyed working there as a plumber. On site here, it is, you know, if it gets over a certain temperature, if you're working on the union sites, you get kicked off. You know, if it goes over 35 degrees, you can't work. If you can't be working in the rain, you can't be doing certain things in Australia. It is to do with health and safety. And how they'll measure on that is, do you hold the necessary skills and that qualification that you've passed? Or if you go and get your white card, which is the Aussie version of the CSCS card, that basically takes the issue from the employer. So if you got hurt, and you hold a qualification and you hold your white card, well, the onus is more on yourself, because you did have the necessary training and qualifications to do those tasks. So it falls, you know, it takes the pressure off the employer. So if you are hitting up employers, guys, and they're asking for you to hold an Australian qualification, that's generally the reason. And it's weird, Ant, because some occupations, like in New South Wales, if you're a motor mechanic, you have to hold your Australian qualification to be registered as a motor mechanic. But if you're in Victoria, you don't need that qualification. It's not mandatory. It's like each state and territory has their own rules. And most of the time, the qualification is required. I know in WA, Ant, that painters, believe it or not, need to be qualified to do their work. It's like electricians, plumbers, refrigeration mechanics, and painters.
Yeah, so New South Wales as a whole, that they have what's called a COP, or Certificate of Proficiency. And you actually have your skills assessment, you have your qualification, then you're verified again to work in that trade. And that's for all various different trades. That can be a licensed trade, a non-licensed trade. It's just, as Wes just mentioned, the state regulations are different depending on which state you go to.
And it's hard because they go on social media out and they're like, I need this, I need that. They move to the state and they're like, oh, well, I wasn't aware. So, guys, we actually have an upskilling page on our relocation website. And that's the website that's made by migrants for migrants. We can add lots of things, but you'll see we can find out where people go for date night. Aunt, there you go, bit of romantic DUC loving in there. But where to take the kids on holidays, to what's free, to to see good things in Australia that other migrants have enjoyed. But we snuck in the upskilling section on there purely for that reason, because I guess when you're looking to get to Oz and you've got your skills assessment done, and wouldn't it be nice to be able to go straight into employment? Because if you go straight into employment, it makes it a bit easier to find property. It also means, unless you've got a fair bit of money behind you, you've just sold a property, it's good to get into work straight away. So definitely look at having the relevant qualifications. And if we haven't got the right relevant, or you haven't got the right relevant qualifications, something that we can work with you on. Any tips for the documentary assessment part, Ant?
I would just say be prepared. If you know that you're looking at even potentially wanting to do the move to Australia and do apply for a visa, if you're in a workplace and you're doing tasks that might be probably more the complex tasks of the job, I'll be taking photos or especially videos, very short videos of you just doing that type of work, because that will help you out when you get to the stage of collecting all that evidence. You've already done half of it. So, and then probably the next one.
With that, when you say do a video, so you're looking for someone with their face in it and they're discussing, can you just give us an example of what you would look for?
Yeah. So let's just say you're a carpenter and you're doing an apex roof or something like that. I'd be looking at, if you're cutting a joint for the apex roof, I'll be getting someone to take some photos or taking a video yourself, if you can put your camera somewhere or your phone somewhere to take that recording. Just take me doing action, because an assessor just wants to see action, because that speaks a thousand words. So if you can just get short videos, photos are great, but they don't prove that you're actually able to do the job. So short videos is the gold. It's gold for any type of assessment. If you can take short videos, you just, even if you've got a job that the job is done, go around the site or whatever the work is and just take a short video you're doing explaining how you did the task, things like that as well. It makes the job much easier for an assessor to review, to say, okay, this guy knows his stuff or not.
But very well said. And guys, I'd like to follow that up with the changes that are coming in next July for the work and holiday people, for example, from the UK. If you're thinking about, obviously come here, do your work and holiday visa 100%, full work rights, why not? If you're in a qualification and if you've got an occupation and you're not sure if you need an Australian qualification to be employed, then definitely hit us up. But either way, what you should be doing is using our client portal to start getting all the documentation prior to arriving, because one of the challenges is pay documents, tax documents, photos, videos. Sometimes people get here, and I'll give you an example, like maybe a fitter, for example, might arrive in Australia, want to do a bit of traveling while they want to get their documentation. But what you've just said, you want to get photos and videos. So if you can be preparing that before you actually come on shore, it doesn't mean you need to pay the TRA skills assessment fees, guys, but it means you've got everything that you need. So when you make that decision, if you want to stay and that skills assessment's part of the visa process, at least you've got all the documentation gathered, and it just means that you're not rushing right at the end. I feel, Ant, that lots of our young tradies that come over here, enjoying themselves, having a good time, getting used to the Aussie lifestyle, but then they're sort of hitting up mum, dad, whoever else, their employers, saying, oh, I need this, I need that. And so many of them said they just wish they knew, if they had grabbed it while they were in the UK, for example, their life would have been a lot easier. So do reach out, listeners, if you're thinking about coming over. It's not expensive to use our client portal to start getting all the documents.
The preparation is the key. The preparation of doing any type of assessment, as you said, Wes, just get things. If you're thinking or considering even coming across, even on a work and holiday visa. Just get what you think you can get in case you want to do it and be here full time or permanent or whatever the visa type you want to come on.
Now, and we know our clients don't fail skills assessments. When I say we, I mean the DUC clients won't fail skills assessments because we'll make sure everything's fine. What happens if someone does fail the skills assessments? What are the TRA requirements that you need to uphold?
So the TRA requirements for an unsuccessful skills assessment is you can apply for a reassessment. And if you, depending on which stage of the process you actually fail, you would be reassessed on that stage alone only. So there is a cost for that, and it can vary depending on which pathway you are. But generally, it's under $1,000 for a reassessment. Yeah, so anyone can do it at any time, but you do have a limit of 12 months to create to complete that reassessment. Look, it hardly ever happens, as Wes just mentioned, but, you know, in some cases we do have people that do fail, and it's probably because they're not been pre-planned. They've not done a bit of homework on their CV, or they've just not provided enough evidence. However, yeah, we still, as a bit of a service that we provide, is we sometimes give someone a second chance without making it unsuccessful.
Yeah, it's good. It's good that you do that. It shows the human sort of side of it as well. I mean, at the end of the day, the job is to get people a positive skills assessment, but they've got to provide the relevant information because we've got to protect those industries as well. When I sort of explained to my mates out when I was in the UK and all that, they're like, what do you exactly do? I'm like, well, I'm border control for trades, you know, trying to make sure we've got, you know, people coming over with the right relevant skills. And you know what? 9 times out of 10, they do. You know, it's a bit of terminology that's different. It breaks down, but generally, you know, if you look at a car is a car. If it's from the UK or Australia, it still pretty much runs similar.
Yeah.
You know, if a house is built a little bit similar, there's certain rules and regulations. You know, for our licensed trades guys, you know, we're not assessing you against the Australian qualification. That's what the gap training's for. That's what you do after you gain your skills assessment, which will come with an OTSR, offshore technical skills record. That's when you focus on the Australian regulations. We're not assessing you at all against that. I get that question a lot, Ant, where a couple of people we assess, they're like, but I don't know the, you know, I'm not sure what this means. Like, we're not there to assess you on that. We're there to assess you on your background. And then later on when you do the gap training, that's when you will learn the, you know, the how to use your reg books and and the Aussie standards.
Yeah, exactly. And we try not to put too much focus, as you say, Wes, on you're not going to know, unless you've lived and worked in Australia under that trade, you're never going to know what the Australian standards are. So hence the reason why the skills assessment itself is based around the work that you do onshore, what you do in your own country. So certainly from both the licensed trades that we do, it's based around your own electricity standards, so to speak, and it's based on the generic basics of the trade. So you just got to demonstrate those skills.
Yeah, good on you, Ant. Well, Anthony, I just want to thank you so much for all you do for these migrants coming over. You've got a wonderful setup there, and I think we work quite well together. And just appreciate you taking your time out of your day to run through this. And we'll add some links to it. So a massive shout out from Anthony Taylor from Australia Trade Training College. Cheers for listening. I hope you enjoyed this podcast on trade skills assessments. We'll catch you next time, guys. Thanks again, Ant.
Cheers, guys. See you, mate.